Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach, KX93.5.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that the opinions expressed on any public affairs show do not reflect those of KX93.5, its management, or the board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. Yes, this is Laguna Roundtable. I am back. I sound a little raspy, but I am amongst the living. Got the voice back. Thanks very much for Dr. Ari and our old nemesis, Thor Erickson, for filling in last week for me while I was unable to talk like this at all. And it was pretty bad. So thanks again for that. Sorry about that, folks. But sometimes the bug gets you, you know, so if you don't have socialized medicine, you know, I had to wait for a couple of days to go see him. Actually, I went to see the doctor, but unrelated issues. And they gave me some drugs for this. So I got some K-Flex going on to take care of the sinus infection, whatever it was that caused this. Dr. Ari's here with me this morning on Laguna Roundtable as we do our Super Bowl Sunday show. So we're off. I'm going to talk a little football. We're going to talk a little Donald Trump, I guess, too. Should we talk Trump?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And thank goodness you're back here again, Jim. It's good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you, sir.
I missed you last week, excuse me, and the good back and forth, the good repartee between us. So.
Yes,
great to have you back
like
in the studio.
It sounded like the choir preaching to itself last week.
Well, and, you know, it's actually, this is 2 full weeks under our belt of the Trump administration. There's so much to talk about. I'm thrilled to have you back in the studio today, and hopefully we will have some good conversation and some interesting thoughts for our listeners.
Oh, I'm sure we will. But, hey, you know what? 2 weeks, no nuclear bombs, the world hasn't come to an end. Soothsayers, kind of not really accurate.
Well, no nuclear bombs launched yet, but of course the scientists have set the atomic clock closer to nuclear midnight. So
yeah,
obviously they don't see this as trending in the right direction.
Yeah, because of course they don't have a political agenda in all this. All right, as we mentioned, we will talk about Super Bowl Sunday, Falcons versus the Patriots. We'll also be talking, as we said, about Trump's visa program. We'll be talking about what happened to Milo up at Berkeley. We'll be talking about the SCOTUS nominee, Mr. Garish, and talk a little economic data. And we'll also talk about, like I said, on the back end, about a little bit more about Trump and the first 15 days and Super Bowl predictions. And I believe, Ari, though, you have it on the table this morning. You're going to
I do have it on the table this morning. I hope it's going to be an interesting and informative one to listen to. It's called The Bully Pulpit and the Bully.
And we've selected music that is representative of the Super Bowl contenders, as we usually do. So one song from an Atlanta-based band and one song from a Boston-based band.
Atlanta is definitely home to some great music. So
yes.
Looking forward to that as well.
We got a little different on the band on this one, but we'll see how it works out for us. So Laguna Roundtable, KX935. Let's jump into the week that was and all things Trumpian for all of those on the left that have Trump derangement syndrome that just have to talk about Trump, 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 Trump.
Well, you know, this is actually our first show back on the air together since Trump's inauguration. So
I guess it is true.
I'm curious to hear your take. What are your thoughts on the first 2 weeks of the train wreck?
No nuke. Wow. Let's not go in with a biased slant or anything. Well, against what the prognosticators were saying, the world hasn't ended. We have an anti-nuclear war. So, I mean, I think he's done a great job for the first 2 weeks.
What a great bar. You know, nothing like the low expectations.
Yes. Well, he's exceeding low expectations.
Yes.
Putting the bar low enough on the field. Yes.
So you're pleased with the first 2 weeks.
No, I think the guy's thrown a lot out there. I think he's done a lot of things. You know, they promised a lot of things. He's fired a lot of executive orders out there. They've done a lot of work as far as repealing Obamacare. And there's a lot of things he says he's going to take care of, and he's done. So that's I think, for those that supported Trump. Again, I was not a Trump voter, and I was not necessarily a Trump supporter. But just as far as somebody who's looking for a president who's going to come in and do something, I think Donald Trump has done that, and I think he's done a pretty good job of that. He's had a small setback with the visa program.
Small setback. Doing something's not the same as doing something smart, and that's part of the challenge that we're facing with
Been doing things that the Republican Party's wanted a president and a leader to do for a while,
and he's actually
doing that.
And that's why I probably should reiterate, doing something is not the same as doing something smart. You know, one of the great challenges that we face with this gentleman is he really ought to take an afternoon and sit down and read the Constitution. He should learn a little bit about American history and what this nation is actually about. He should also spend a little bit of time and effort trying to understand and get his head around what it is that made America great in the first place. He doesn't seem to have any conception of our Constitution and the freedoms that it provides us and what it really means to be a light unto the nations. And that's what, you know, and that's what we need to go back to. Why is the United States a great country? And it's not just because of our economic power.
And because we take care of our citizens?
Well, in part. That's certainly a big part of it.
Citizens, not illegals that want to come here illegally. Citizens. Big difference.
Well, but also a home to people who are seeking refuge from the world. And that's part of what we need to go back to.
To a point, yes. Okay, so you want to talk about the Trump visa program. Why don't you go ahead and – sounds like you've already started to head down that road. So why don't you go ahead and continue with that and with whatever your objections are to the Trump program.
The objections are is that he's trying to apply a religious test in violation of the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. And
okay, well, that's actually not correct. Okay. Now, let's play a little test here, okay?
Okay.
You want to talk about a religious test? Okay, so you're going down the road, of course, that the
lucid people.
Well, no, that the insane media has been going down.
Ah, the media.
Yes, that basically that this is a Muslim ban. That's what they prefer to call it. Do you agree with that?
He at points even Trump is calling this a Muslim ban, but when you take countries which are heavily predominantly Muslim. And then you say, we won't take anybody from there, but we will make exceptions for people who are Christian, who are Chaldean, who are Jewish, who are what have
you. But are those people not being persecuted in those countries?
Are they being persecuted?
Yes.
Absolutely, as are some of their Muslim brothers. So we do see broad discrimination.
Okay. Let's go back to the initial premise, Muslim ban, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm going to ban something, am I going to let the number one country in the world who supplies that item off? Am I going to let the number two country off? Am I going to let the number three country off? The number one country in the world for Muslim population is Indonesia. They're not on the list. Number two is Pakistan. They're not on the list. Number three is India. They're not on the list.
Okay.
So if I'm going to ban something, am I not going to put the one, two, and three providers of that subject on the list? I'm not really doing a very good job of banning Muslims if I'm allowing them from the largest countries in the world to continue to flow in here.
But they're going after soft targets like Libya and
they're going after parts where there's
Somalia. Terrorism.
Libya's a terrorist home
since
for Al-Qaeda.
Since 9/11, there are zero Americans who have been killed by anybody from the seven nations that were identified in Trump's
That's
list.
That's great. Let's
so
keep
what
it that
this
way.
Winds up doing is it satisfies his base because we're keeping people out from these evil countries when there's no evidence of any problems associated with people who are from these countries.
What were Trump's two promises?
You know, he's going to build a wall and have Mexico pay for it, which is, of course, is sheer nonsense.
That's a different problem. Hang on. He's going to make America great, and he's going to keep America safe. So number two
is
right there.
But here's the problem. This is not keeping America safe. It may not manifest itself in the first 30 seconds of this order, but what he is doing is he is undermining our friendships, our relationships, and our ability to collect intelligence.
Really? But the
intelligence is what we have to have from these countries.
Please tell me how tight we are with Syria right now. I mean, are he and Boss are best buddies? I don't think so. Libya? Does Libya even have a government right now? Libya is run by a bunch of tribal chiefs right now.
Well, but you're correct. We don't have
so there's nothing
functioning
to have a relationship
governments.
With.
But we have to have intelligence from there. When we had the war,
is that what
the civil war,
are for?
When we had the civil war break out in Syria, this is what now going on 5 years, six
five
years?
5 plus years, yes.
Okay. So in 5 or 6 years.
You mean when Obama said there's a red line that they can't cross and But they did, and then he ignored it?
I'll come back to that. One of the first things that we saw were some of the Republican hawks, like John McCain, who was a hawk on Syria at the time, saying that we had to come in and we had to arm the rebels and seek the overthrow of Assad. But the reality was, and this is where Obama made a misstatement and was absolutely wrong in trying to draw a red line, we did not know who those rebels in opposition for Assad actually were. And we didn't want to repeat the same serious mistake that we made a generation or so ago in Afghanistan, where we were arming the Mujahideen, the so-called freedom fighters, who morphed into, they were led by Osama bin Laden, and they morphed into Al-Qaeda. So we need to be smarter about that. We need to know who the people are that we are arming. Just because they are the enemy of our enemy doesn't make them our friend. And so we need to know who it is that we're arming so that those weapons don't wind up in the power position and being turned against us. So
you're saying that Sun Tzu was wrong? The enemy of my enemy? Wasn't it Sun Tzu that said the enemy of my enemy is my friend?
May well have been. It sounds like it could be, but I'm not sure. I'm more familiar with
the saying.
Yes, and I'm not sure about that. I'm more familiar with the saying. I don't remember who it was who said it particularly.
Okay.
But we need to be smarter about this. We have to know who it is that we are arming. And, in fact, time has proven that that was the best decision because these are not our friends in the rebel role in Syria. So that would have been a dramatic mistake. We can't undermine, though, our allies, the people who are helping us, the human intelligence on the ground. After 9/11, there were several arguments about, you know, the need any longer for human intelligence or whether we should be able to collect intelligence electronically.
Right.
And the reality is there is nothing that replaces having people on the ground. No. And by instituting this ban.
And you know why we were in that position? Because Bill Clinton relied on electronic intelligence. He didn't want to get people in harm's way. He didn't want a large core of Muslim speaking people speaking Arabic. He wanted drones. He wanted that. You know, that's why drone development.
Right. That's when.
And Obama's the same way. He doesn't want people on the ground. That's why he was so hesitant to put any people in Syria. He doesn't want people in harm's way. He's a scaredy cat when it comes to that.
We also have to keep in mind that Bill Clinton started dealing with this threat about 20 years ago, actually more than 20 years ago. So the drone technology was really taking off at that time.
Well, drone technology was just basically a camera that you could hover over somewhere for like 5 minutes.
We didn't see them armed with weaponry like we're seeing now.
Correct.
But the idea behind those drones, and it was actually a very noble idea, and we see what the weaknesses of it are in retrospect. But the reality is that, you know, as any good American president would try to do, Bill Clinton wanted to ensure that we had few, if any, American casualties. And the thought was we can go in there mechanically, excise our demons, and somehow have wonderful and safe places around the world. And we know that that's certainly not true. There is nothing in this world to supplant human intelligence for getting to this.
Absolutely not.
The Israelis have known this for two generations.
If not longer, sure. Since their existence, probably. Yeah.
I remember reading, if some of our listeners are familiar with Thomas Friedman's From Beirut to Jerusalem, I remember reading about an intelligence officer from the opposing side in Lebanon during the Israeli occupation of Lebanon in the early 1980s. And this gentleman went into the bathroom and was blown up in the bathroom in his own home. There is nothing that can supplant having the human intelligence on the ground if you want to find out where a guy's, you know, dropping a load and when you can target him. So, we need to.
That just doesn't seem fair.
Well, you know.
Guy takes his newspaper, he's going to have a little morning read, and wow. Bomb will ruin your whole morning, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, gives completely, you know, new meaning to, oh, God, that was a big one.
Yeah, thank you very much. All right, Laguna Roundtable.
Yeah, still on the air for now.
KX935, yes, thank you very much.
No, but here's the challenge that we're facing is that we have intelligence officers that were serving the United States in Iraq that were coming to the United States here a week or so ago with their families trying to seek safe haven. They have been our greatest allies on the ground. They have been tremendous resources for this country in terms of providing information about our opponents. And they were turned away under this ban.
Well, it wasn't a ban again. Now, okay.
Well, you know, you can.
But let's go back to the countries.
Okay.
Now, how did Trump develop this list of countries that he picked?
Well, nominally, he took them from a list that was formulated by President Obama.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct.
Absolutely. But they were not intended as the kind of ban. They were intended to identify countries where there were very high risks of terrorist activity.
Because
we had such failed governments in those nations. Look at them. You know,
December 2015, President Obama signed into law a measure of placing limited restrictions on certain travelers who had visited Iran, Sudan, Iraq, or Syria, and then added later in a couple of months Libya, Somalia, and Yemen to that list, and what the administration called a growing threat from foreign terrorist fighters.
Yes.
Even the do-nothing President Obama knew that these people were a threat. So why is Trump all of a sudden a Muslim racist bigot? Because he follows up on what the Obama administration does. Why wasn't Obama a racist Muslim bigot?
Because at the time that this ban occurred, as I say, there were threats that were coming out from these nations.
That there's not threats, the same threats or similar threats today.
We wanted to see and take stock of what was happening there. We had, as I say, we had failed regimes. But I find it somewhat disingenuous that the Trump administration is now looking to what Obama did as a guide or as political cover for going forward. This is an overreach. This is an oversimplification of the issue.
Oversimplification.
And we are creating tremendous danger to our troops in the military serving us around the world. When we wind up with this kind of behavior, we won't get people cooperating with us. We won't see the kind of intelligence that we need.
You're concerned that the Muslim world is going to go to war with us? Guess what? They've been at war with us since 9/11. So haven't really changed the playing field.
There is an element within the Muslim world. This is giving our enemies, this is giving ISIS the recruiting tool that they need, propaganda.
I thought Trump was a recruiting tool or something else was a recruiting
tool.
Well,
Trump is really just a tool, but we can apply that to
Trump to you.
You know what? I prefer not to refer to him in those ways. He gave nicknames to just about every one of his opponents. I'm just calling him Twisted Trump because this man is truly
Crooked Hillary.
Twisted. Well, that's
by
right.
By the way, Twisted
Hillary, lying Ted Cruz.
Lying Ted. By the way, slight off topic here, but, you know, relevant. Tuesday night, I believe it's going to be.
Okay.
CNN is doing a town hall. They're going to have a discussion on health care.
Yes.
Bernie Sanders versus Ted Cruz. Now, is that not must-watch television?
Oh, absolutely.
That's going to be entertaining.
It should be entertaining. It should be very entertaining.
I'm afraid that Bernie's going to stroke out, though, after listening to Ted go at him.
Bernie has stayed very well composed over time, and I think he can give
a good cogent
argument about our need for health care in this country, like making sure that Planned Parenthood and other women healthcare organizations are properly funded.
Yeah, I think Ted's going to have a few retorts for him, but definitely, I just remembered it when you were talking about when we brought up Ted Cruz. And it's not Ted Cruz versus Bernie Sanders. That's like, wow, that's going to be awesome. That's going to be awesome to watch.
Well, you know, as easy as it is to get bogged down on any one topic, you know, we should probably cover, there's been so much going on in this last week and a half, 2 weeks. Let's make sure we get to some of the other issues as well, because there was a riot that broke out at a protest up in Berkeley this week. And that was some of the
Milo.
big California headlines. Cal Berkeley was on the map.
Yes, the land of free speech, the place where they broke through the barrier about being able to speak against the government and speak against
and
other things. And then now they're becoming the land of tolerance only, or the land of free speech. As long as we like the speech, it's free.
Well, and Trump, threatened to remove federal funding from Cal Berkeley. So
now you know who runs the UC system now.
Janet Napolitano,
who was Homeland Security Director for President Obama.
Absolutely.
So
she was. But going back to the incident up at Berkeley, you know, I have very mixed feelings about this because I understand
mixed feelings should only be one feeling: freedom of speech.
Well, absolutely. And that's where I have a problem with this, because back in the, I believe it was around 79 to 81, I forget the date exactly, the neo-Nazis wanted to march in a town, Skokie, Illinois.
Illinois, yeah. Maybe around 77, I think. I remember that case.
Yeah, it was during the Carter years,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, I think it was.
It may have been around 77, 78, yeah. Somewhere in that time frame. But they specifically targeted a community, Skokie, Illinois, which had a tremendously large population of Holocaust survivors. And it was a very much in your face. And the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, you know, the people who actually safeguard our nation's constitutionally provided liberties, the ACLU actually came out and defended the neo-Nazis and their right to march.
1977 it was.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you.
National Socialist Party of America versus the Village of Skokie.
Okay, good. We don't want to go all Kellyanne Conjob here. We want to make sure that we're using real facts, not alt facts here. So in 1977, the neo-Nazis wanted to march, and the Supreme Court actually ruled in favor of the Nazis. Just
correct.
Because speech is abhorrent doesn't mean that you can squelch it.
Great, and I can completely agree. There's nothing. But the thing is, why has this become a thing on college campuses now? I mean, you've got they had people that were setting up thousands of safe rooms for election night just on the odd chance that Trump won, which they were probably overfilling when Trump actually did win. But they had the one of the colleges that hosted the debate. I think it's Washington University in St. Louis.
Right.
They had safe rooms set up for the students and warned them to stay away from this part of the campus because you may hear unsafe things that upset you. It's like, what kind of place of college campuses have become? I mean, where you can't, you know, where free speech is only the speech that you want to hear. You want to hear dissenting opinions from Milo. Milo is, if you don't know who Milo is, he is an editor of Breitbart, but he is a flaming gay immigrant. So you would think from that basis alone that he would be very, very, very favorably endorsed on a college campus. He's a minority and is a homosexual. Those are groups that, from the Democratic point of view, are always welcomed and we always want to hear their opinions. But he happens to have opinions that are counter to that, and he's a big Trump supporter. And therefore, he's become a cause celeb of rejection when it comes to college campuses. Well, UCLA was going to host him the next night. They just canceled the whole thing before it even started because they didn't even want to. They didn't want a repeat of the whole Berkeley thing.
Well, here's part of the challenge is obviously, you know, there's this tension between, you know, hate speech and do we have to give them a format in order to air
that. But it's not hate speech.
But
just many cases of speech you don't like.
Well,
that they don't like, not saying you don't.
Right,
like.
Right. No, I understand. I appreciate your clarifying that.
Yes.
But here's the reality. I think it's very instructive to hear lunatics like this.
Well, he's not a lunatic, but it's a different opinion.
We can quibble over that, but
David
we would
Duke's
take the
lunatic.
Best hours.
Milo's not a lunatic.
Okay. For the purpose of this
I've
show,
actually met him. We met him at the convention.
We'll concede that. But even if you consider this man to be so far out on the fringe that it is hate speech, as apparently some of the folks from Berkeley do seem to believe, I think there's something.
Well, they believe anything that doesn't advocate for
any
position that he's got.
Okay.
Trump's hate speech to them.
But, well. Again, that's another show for another day. But there is something instructive about hearing speech which you so to your very core disagree with.
Yes.
Had we not had the record of the Nuremberg rallies, we wouldn't know some of the vulgarities of a Hitler and Nazi machinery.
Right.
So if you don't agree with this, if you find it abhorrent to your core, allow it to take place, record it, have it for the record, and then use your cognitive abilities to refute this, to
yes.
show where it is specious,
exactly.
to show where it is nonsense, to show where it is sheer demagoguery. You have to hear it and then be able to call it out.
Yes.
But to shut it down
is wrong.
Is exactly, because you don't do that in a democracy. You don't do that. That's
well,
why we have a First Amendment,
the land of free speech. Where they have something like the equivalent of the British Talkers Corner, where you go up and, you know, Freedom
right.
Park or something, or Free Speech Park or something, where you can, where they have all these, literally, these are a lot of crazies out there saying stuff. But Berkeley, you shut down free speech because it's something, but it's becoming a problem on college campuses. I mean,
people
Condoleezza Rice was banned from a camp. I mean, a Secretary of State. Right. Because they have policies. She has policies they don't
well,
like.
Well, because some on the far left consider her to be a war criminal as being part of the Bush administration.
Yes, I understand the
absolutely, but she's still
the insanity of their argument.
There's still a value in hearing what the former Secretary of State said. This is where we are supposed to be better. It goes back to the old adage, I may not believe in what you have to say, but I will defend to my death your right to say it.
Sure.
And that's where we're seeing this mistake on the far left, just as we're seeing mistakes across the board. But, you know, I don't agree with this. I don't think it is appropriate.
But I'm kind of having a hard time seeing Condoleezza Rice's hate speech.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yes,
you want to protest her coming to the campus.
Fine,
great, I understand that. But allow her to speak and then deconstruct her arguments and show where she is in error. Show where this is simply not in coordination with the facts. The problem is now that we're dealing with people like Kellyanne Conjob and
Conway.
Potato, potato. But
Kellyanne Conway is her name
with her alternate. Facts are not up for debate. They are not up for discussion. This is where I have problems. You know, we can extend this globally, where I have problems with a lot of the Palestinian arguments in dealing with this nation of Israel. They want to deny, example, that the Temple Mount was actually part of Jewish heritage and actually had a temple on it. So that would mean there was conspiracies going back to ancient Rome.
Don't know that one as well as you do.
Well,
so
you know,
take your word
there's
for
so
it.
Much. There's so much.
But I know there's a lot of stuff coming out of the Palestinian side. That
there's so much historical documentation of this, and the Palestinians are trying to get the United Nations to which has its own problems,
yes.
to rewrite history or to deny history and to say this had nothing to do with the Jewish homeland.
Okay, we're veering a little bit off track, but I understand it's another topic for another.
But
day.
you are not entitled to create your own facts and pretend that those are realities, and that's what we're seeing with this administration. Is this pretense of facts or alt facts, or to have somebody like Spicer? No,
Sean
Spicer. You know, say
right,
well,
right.
But that's what the president believes. Well, you know, if the president is hallucinating or is operating under delusions, that doesn't make them real facts any more than you know.
Ari, take a breath.
Yes.
Take a breath.
It doesn't, let's just leave it at this. It doesn't make them real facts just because somebody has a delusion about that.
Well, let's first of all, Laguna Roundtable, KX935 with your host, Randy Jim and
Dr. Ari Grayson.
Okay, let's talk about factually based nominees for the Supreme Court. Why don't you talk about our next, or the Trump nominee for the Supreme Court
Colorado. Here's where Trump has failed us yet again in his first 2 weeks. And in all honesty, in the 13 weeks leading up between the general election and the inauguration, what has he done to heal the divide in this country? He picks a Supreme Court nominee from the right, from the fairly far right. Some would say from the extreme right. Okay. So wherever your opinion lands.
Some would say for the middle of the road. So, I mean, some would say this, some would say that.
That's only because the road has shifted so far to the extreme right. But, you know, this is like an exit ramp off of the freeway. We've gone so far off to the right.
Come on. This is a this is what they call a like for like. You're basically switching. You're switching Antonin Scalia for Antonin Scalia Jr. It's a like for like. You can't complain about this.
But our Constitution doesn't provide for you to stonewall a legitimate nomination to the court. This is the purview of the sitting president.
And the Senate to confirm, and they did not wish
Senate,
to.
And the Senate, absolutely, forget confirmed, they refused to even provide any hearings regarding this nomination. This is where the right went wrong. So now they've created so much resentment there. The seat is not guaranteed. These are not assigned seats. This is not like Lebanon was post the French mandate, where you had a government where you had so many seats signed to each of the different religious factions. We have a government that when a sitting president has an opening on the court, that president is entitled to a replacement. There is no guarantee that this replacement has to be continuing the mission of the previous seat holder. If the court shifts further to the left or further to the middle, in the case of Garland, then so be it. That's the way our democracy ebbs and flows. But what this administration, or excuse me, what the Senate has done for a year is they stonewalled a legitimate pick. They would not even allow a hearing. They tried to call Obama a lame duck president. A lame duck occurs after an election to replace it, not arbitrarily in a year before, because you say, well, we're in the political season now and we should let the American people decide. Well, the American people had decided. They, in 2012, reelected President Barack Obama, and he was entitled to fill this seat. So liberals and people on the left and many others in this country feel that that was a stolen Supreme Court seat and nomination, and that the court, by all rights, had the opportunity to be shifted and to move further to a more progressive agenda. And that's representative
but
democracy.
But how do you really feel?
Yeah, well, you know, one day I'm going to actually let loose and I'll let you know what I really think.
Okay. So
what do you think of the nomination? Are the Democrats right in trying to obstruct this?
No, they're not, because it's the Senate's job to confirm or not confirm. And the Senate didn't wish to hold a hearing for the previous person, and now they wish to hold one for this current person. So that's just the way that it works out.
On Inauguration Day, on Obama's first term in 2009, Republican leadership met under the direction of Mitch McConnell and said, we will do everything we can to ensure this is a one-term president. We will not cooperate.
They obviously weren't good enough to do that, were they? We will not give him
anything to succeed. Well, they completely...
So they failed at it. So mission not accomplished. Move on.
But the problem...
Aren't you guys the kings of move on?
The president.
Move on.
No, actually, there's.
Is that what Soros threw a lot of money at? Move on.
MoveOn.org. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Move on. Take your own advice. Take Gerald Soros' advice. You take his money all the time. Why not?
But it seems like time and time again, the statement is basically that, well, you know what? You guys are supposed to play nice. This is the way our government is supposed to work. Those rules only seem to apply when there's a Democrat in office, holding the office of presidency.
Look,
so
the Democrats have been not holding up their deals since the 86th Immigration Act, where the deal was you let 3 million illegals become citizens and we'll vote for more border security going forward. 3 million illegals got citizenship. The Democrats never upheld their.
There was far more border security under Barack Obama than there was under George H.W. Bush.
This goes back to '86. They refused then to fund the additional border security, and it's been south from there on. And now we got 20 million, almost 20 million illegals in this country. Different subject, different day.
Our border security has gotten much better.
Yeah, that's why we have 20 million illegals in this country, because it's gotten better.
I don't think those numbers are accurate.
Neil Gorsuch is a great nominee. He's a great constitutional scholar. He will be a great Supreme Court justice. He will be in the mold of Antonin Scalia. And I think America will be a better place for his service to our country.
That remains to be seen.
Well,
we're going to learn a little bit more about him. But when he takes the position of saying that abortion should be illegal, then we have real problems in this country.
See,
this is
the thing that you guys are missing is this isn't the fight you guys want right now. You want the fight if someone else drops off the court between now and the end of either Trump's first midterm or if there's a second Trump term. That's the fight you want. And that's why I think they picked Gorsuch now. Because the second one's going to be prior, and that's the one that your guys are going to have to fight almost to the death on. Because that's the because unless it somehow turns out to be like Robert or Alito disappearing from the court, if it's the persons we think it's going to be like Kennedy or Ginsburg disappearing from the court for the next nominee, then you're going to have a very fundamental problem from your side of the aisle of that court flipping conservative for a significant period of time. Especially if it's Kennedy. Kennedy's been the swing vote for you guys. And he was the Reagan nominee that went south.
Well, and the nominee and Trump's nominee is 49 years old. It's not inconceivable that this man would be sitting on the court for 75
until
the age of 75 to 85. We have
right, could be there for 30 plus years.
Yeah, we have Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is now 84 years old. I believe 84
Kennedy?
Years old in March. He turns 80.
Oh, Kennedy only 80. Oh, okay.
Only 80. See, that's.
Well, no, I thought he was older than her. That's what
you know,
I was interested.
Well, but that's the challenge. You know, 80 years right. old. That's 31 years in Gorsuch's.
Right.
Like you said, the real lifespan.
The real fight that you guys are going to want to take is the fight for the next nominee, because that's the one that's going to be the deciding factor on the court if this happens under a Trump administration.
Well, but do you understand also why the left in this country sees this as a stolen seat, that this was an opportunity to fill the seat with somebody who is much more moderate in somebody like.
I am not
sympathetic?
No, wrong word. Thank you. But no, no,
okay, so you are unsympathetic. Okay, so now that we've established that.
Wow. I understand that you have some possibly legitimate concern about that seat.
Okay.
Though, under advice and consent, they advise and they didn't consent. So, you know.
They didn't advise. They never had hearings.
I mean, if this had been like, you know, if it had been a situation where you were replacing like a Breyer or you were replacing a Ginsburg with a Republican president and the Democratic Senate, he wouldn't set up anybody that they liked. He set up Antonin Scalia or something and they wouldn't vote on him. I could understand there being, again, anger or discourse on the right about that, too. So, I mean, it's like it's a situational thing. I'm not saying that you don't have some argument, but you don't have a compelling or a binding argument.
Okay.
And you have no reason to do anything except confirm this person. This gentleman was confirmed 95-0 on his appellate court nomination.
Right.
Okay? So the guy is clearly competent. He's clearly qualified for the court. This is just a question of political badgering and Chuck Schumer trying to be a leader of whatever it is the Democrats on the Senate are right now.
The lucid left?
If it's Bernie Sanders, it's the ill-lucid left. It's the communist left. By the way, he's not even on your side. He's an independent. Bernie cannot even come to call himself a Democrat because you guys are not liberal enough for Bernie Sanders, okay?
Thank goodness for Bernie bringing up the left for us.
He's
absolutely
not the left. He's the alt-left. He's an alt-left.
I know. With all that nonsense about economic justice and health care for people and being able to educate our population so that we can compete with Germany and Japan and the actually well-educated nations of the world. Instead of,
because it's not like we've spent 40 years throwing money in education. What's that gotten us? Oh, yeah, very rich teachers' unions. All right, Laguna Roundtable, KX935. Real quickly, economic data. We had an economy that produced 277,000 new jobs in January, but the unemployment rate went up. You'd kind of figure, well, why would the unemployment rate go up if we added that many jobs? Well, Dr. Ari, do you want to talk about this or do you want me to talk about this?
Why don't you go ahead and start?
All right, okay. Why did the jobs go up? Well, because for one very good reason. We have a leader in the White House. We have somebody that people believe is going to generate a better economy going forward. Now, the actual reason is there are more people in the workforce now. People who have not been looking for jobs under Obama because of the dire economic circumstances that have been under the Obama administration.
Actually, those
have come out now and decided, hey, maybe there's a chance. I believe in Trump making America better. And there's a chance now that I'm able to get a job, so I'm going to jump back into the workforce and try to find a job. So there's more people looking for jobs. That is a good thing in America.
But
it's bad they can't find them, but it's good that they're looking again.
If they've fallen out of the workforce looking for a job under a Obama administration, those numbers would not be factored into the equation because they're no longer considered part of the job market.
Right, so, but they now are back saying that, hi, I am looking for a job. I am back now.
Well,
that's why there's more people looking for jobs and the unemployment rate went up, even though there were more jobs out there.
And they're going to be very hard pressed actually finding jobs with the policies that we're seeing coming out of the Trump administration. We're already seeing pushback from companies like Google and Apple and others in the tech sector.
Yeah, you know, I got a question about that.
But saying that we can't get the employees that we need and that many of our employees, some of our best and brightest, come from some of the areas of the world.
I've worked in tech for 20 years. You know why they want those people? Two simple reasons. They can pay them less and they can control them. What these tech companies want is they don't want someone to come in and will do exactly what they're being, what they want a coder to come in and will do exactly what he's being told to program. They don't want someone to come up with a better idea or a different idea or to say that your business plan is silly or that you can't really get this done.
Okay.
They just want someone who's going to sit there and say, yes, sir. Type, 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 yes, sir. Type, 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 yes, sir. That's what they want. And they can also pay them less. And what do you mean? What do you mean they can control them? They hold their H-1B visas over their heads and say, you do what we want you to do, or we'll send you back to Pakistan or India. Versus an American will say, I'm out of here, middle finger, door's hitting me on the way out. And that's why they want that. That's why I've worked in tech long enough to know that's why they want some of these students from other countries where they can hold the visas over them and control them and make them do what exactly they want and pay them $20,000-$30,000. I mean, we're not talking about paying people $8 an hour to code. We're talking about paying people $85,000 instead of $125,000. So they're not exactly being underpaid as it is.
You know, I'll take very simply, I'm going to take exception with that in that.
Well, you haven't worked in tech for 20 years.
Well, that's true. But when you hear the stories coming out of Apple and the fact that Steve Jobs himself was the child of Syrian refugees used to the United States.
His parents were Libyan. I thought his real dad was Lebanese.
I think Syrian, but, you know, if you ask Syria, you know, they
think they own Lebanon
well,
anyway.
They think they own Lebanon anyway, yeah, okay. But in any case.
Potato, potato.
But we're going to be losing some of our best and brightest minds. And even if it's a relatively small impact, this is going to hurt our economy.
It's not. You know what it's going to mean? It's going to mean you're going to hire Americans to do these jobs rather than third world countries.
You know, go to almost any college campus in this country and you will see that a substantial percentage of students at our college campuses, especially in the STEM fields.
Yes.
That
means we're doing a bad job of getting
children of immigrants. Yeah. They're first or second generation.
Sure.
These are some of
I'm not wishing them ill. I'm not saying like they shouldn't be allowed to take the classes. We should be doing a better job, though, of getting Americans into those jobs. And we should also be doing a better job of hiring Americans in high tech. Because I know plenty of Americans out there that would like to go work for Google or Apple or Facebook. That simply because they know that they could hold an H-1B visa over someone else's head, don't want to hire them where they can pay them $30,000 less.
You know, I'm not inside the tech industry. I'll have to concede that or at least accept
at
your
least
word.
At least take my word for it?
At least accept your word for it at this point, however misguided it is sometimes.
It's not misguided.
I didn't think you could hit that note. In any case... You're too
easy
to...
We're going to Roundtable KX935.
You're too easy to bait this morning.
I think I'll play a little bit of music right now.
All right, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to do my On the Table.
And we're going to talk about the Super Bowl.
Oh, my On the Table, just to remind everybody, the bully pulpit and the bully. So, well, we hope to have you back in just a minute.
We're going to Roundtable a little Aerosmith in honor of Boston and New England Patriots being the Super Bowl today.
Got war, a scumbo, he got oh no sidebar, he won't spinal cracker, he
All right, folks, that's Aerosmith, Come Together, trying to get us to come together as one country under the Trump administration, which the liberals don't seem to want to do. Or maybe it'll be everyone coming together today to watch Super Bowl. I believe it kicks off about 3:17 or 3:21 on the Fox Sports Network, and there will be about 80 zillion billion a million Americans watching that game. We're going to give a little bit more political talk. Dr. Ari wants to do his On the Table. What was it again? What subject of your On the Table this morning?
I'm Ari, and I'm putting the bully pulpit and the bully on the table. The bully pulpit is a term coined by President Theodore Roosevelt, who referred to the White House as a bully pulpit, meaning that it provides a terrific platform to speak out and to listen to. Twisted Trump has wasted opportunity after opportunity to address the myriad concerns of a nation that gave 3 million more votes to his opponent, Hillary Clinton. But Trump seems capable of only lauding himself. After harshly criticizing the intelligence community, Trump went to the CIA's headquarters and stood in front of a wall covered with stars representing men and women of the intelligence agency, people that died serving their country. The stars have no names. These true American heroes remain anonymous. Yet Twisted Trump stood there, lashed out at critics, boasted of his magazine covers, and exaggerated the size of the crowd at his inauguration. During the campaign, Twisted Trump had insulting nicknames for almost everyone: Little Marco, Low Energy Jeb, Lying Ted Cruz, and those were just his Republican cohorts and the people that he may ultimately need to govern. When asked about whom he trusted more, Angela Merkel or Vladimir Putin, Trump refused to support our German ally. He threatened to impose a 30% tax on German cars. He threatened to impose a tax on goods from Mexico, our third largest trading partner, and he subjected President Enrique Peña Nieto to a deluge of insults. Then Twisted Trump went ballistic and reportedly hung up on the Prime Minister of Australia, Mark Turnbull. The Prime Minister of Australia. Try and get your head around that one. There was no apology or attempt to mend fences with an ally and an important intelligence-sharing partner. But Twisted Trump seems pathologically incapable of being gracious to another human being, another nation, or even another point of view. To kick off week two, Twisted Trump signed an executive order, an order banning immigration from 7 Muslim countries. When Acting Attorney General Sally Yates questioned the constitutionality of the order, she was fired. Her reticence proved valid when federal judge James Robart, an appointee of former President George W. Bush, stayed the executive order. Trump responded, "The opinion of this so-called judge, which essentially takes law enforcement away from our country, is ridiculous and will be overturned. This contempt for an independent judiciary that doesn't always bend to his wishes, his incessant bullying, and his lack of respect for the Constitution is truly disturbing. Rather than using the bully pulpit to convey the decency and the dignity of the office of presidency and the decency that makes our nation truly great, Twisted Trump seems incapable of anything beyond bullying and contempt. I'm Ari, and I just put the bully pulpit and the bully on the table."
Yeah, okay, well, let's see. Let's correct a number of different facts that aren't facts that are in there. That's for sure. Let's see. Nieto was about paying for the wall, which he's supposed to be doing.
Supposed to by whose?
Because Trump said so. He's going to pay for the wall.
Trump said so. Okay. But the 30% tax on imports would be taxes that are paid by the American people, not by Mexico. Where's Mexico paying for this?
Well, okay. In factual items, let's go back to the whole, when did he ever threaten to put a 30% tax on German cars? Never heard that.
Oh, gosh, yeah. This was actually, even before Inauguration Day, he was talking about putting a tax on German cars.
Didn't hear a thing about it.
Well, he floated that and said, well, you know, it's like my other ideas. I'm just, you know, putting out hot air and seeing if it floats.
Maybe he's just spitballing. That happens. Okay, I didn't hear about that.
You know what? Some thoughts should be fully germinated inside one's head before one puts out.
Oh, he's talking to the Germans. What's more germinating than the Germans?
Before, you know, putting out those seeds of an idea. And fertilizing them.
Yeah, well, Trump's problem with Australia was that Obama's made a bad deal with them, where we're willing to take their Islamic immigrants that they don't want, they consider to be dangerous, and we're sending them South American immigrants, which are not dangerous.
These are people who were vetted by Australia and will also be vetted by the United States.
Yeah, but they didn't want them. Why didn't they want them?
Australia is an island nation of only about 18 million people.
Yeah.
They can't take all of the immigrants that they would like,
either.
But at
That's
least they haven't shut down their borders in the same way that the United States is seemingly trying to do.
Okay, quick question. Why are we obligated to take every immigrant who wants to come to America? Do you know how many people want to come to America if they're given the opportunity?
But we're not talking about just immigrants here. We're talking about refugees.
How many people do you think in this country want to come to America?
We're talking about refugees here, not immigrants. And we have a very sordid and very dark history.
I'm pretty sure people walking across the border from Mexico are not refugees.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about Australia, and we're talking about 1,250 people who have been isolated now in camps, displaced persons.
By the Australians, not our problem. We didn't isolate them. We didn't put them there.
We also have responsibilities.
These people are such great people. Why won't the Australians take them? 1,800 on a population of 18 million wouldn't even make a dent. They got a huge, vast wasteland in the middle of the country that they can populate.
But they're also they need to be able to absorb and help to ensure that the people who are coming in have the proper support systems that they have. But it's
a quasi-socialist country. Just throw money at it.
But one of the things that makes this nation great is that we are a nation of immigrants.
We're also a nation of laws.
Yes, and they are following the law. There's nothing that these people have done, these refugees have done, which is illegal, which have disqualified them from seeking refugee status here in the United States.
Okay, refugees are different than immigrants.
Well, but that's what we're talking about in these 1,250 individuals.
But if you're somebody who's working for Google, you're not a refugee.
Yeah, but let's stay focused. That's not the issue here. We're talking about
whining and crying about being able to get their people back into the country.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about with Australia. What we're talking about is 1,250 immigrants.
If there's such great people in Australia, you can take them.
In 1939, there was a ship called the St. Louis, which disembarked They disembarked. Not everybody does. They disembarked from Germany. They went to Cuba. They were refused refuge. In Cuba, they could see the lights of Miami as they headed up the coast and towards the United States. They sent telegraph after telegraph to the president to try and gain refugee status here. There were 900 refugees. They were returned to Germany, and somewhere roughly a quarter of the people who were on that ship were killed in Nazi concentration camps.
Okay, 2 points.
We don't want to repeat that history. These people were not a threat. The folks being detained by Australia are not a threat. They will also be properly vetted just as any other refugee that seeks asylum here in the United
States. 2 points. One, Democratic President FDR, so I don't want to hear about it.
And we're not talking about...
If they really want to come to America, they should have beached the boat somewhere down around Galveston on the Mexico side of the border and walked across, because everyone does these days.
Okay, with that bit of sarcasm aside, this is not a matter of whether it was a Democratic president
Why would you want to come to America
Democratic
now?
Presidents have the full right to be incorrect, as do Republican presidents. But this was reflective of a general attitude in the United States, shutting the doors as though these people of Jewish faith were somehow different because of their religious beliefs, and that's what we are seeing now with our Muslim brothers
and sisters. So how many other immigrants...
We're demonizing them because of their religious affiliation, and that is something which the Constitution strictly prohibits. No religious test.
Okay, I want to end this here only because we have to do the Super Bowl comments, because they have 8 other points we can talk about after the show. All right, this is Super Bowl Sunday, as we're talking about. We'll be playing a band from Atlanta as we close out the show, to be fair, between New England and Atlanta. So let's go with a couple of things. Some of the facts. If you want to fly down to Houston, you know what it would cost you right now to grab a ticket to go to Houston?
You couldn't pay me enough to fly down to Houston.
Wow, that's not very friendly. $785.
For a flight.
You know how much people? Yeah, for a flight. You know how much is going to be wagered on the game today?
Oh, I would assume it's in the billions of dollars.
Roughly, because this is illegal wagering, about $4.7 billion.
Okay.
Domino's. What day, as far as busiest day of the year, where do you think this ranks for Domino's?
Oh, this is probably number one.
Number three, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Busiest day of the year for Domino's? Kind of surprising. Halloween. Second busiest day of the year, New Year's Eve. That makes sense. But I'm surprised about that being that.
Somewhat disappointing that our go-to food on New Year's Eve to celebrate the coming of the new year is pizza. But
well, I'm thinking it's people that are staying home and getting drunk rather than going out and getting drunk, or maybe staying home with other friends and getting drunk. But so be it on New Year's
Eve. And not everybody lives in a neighborhood where you can have good Indian food delivered to your front door.
Okay, if you say so, I'll take your word for it. This should bring about $350 million into the Houston economy. So that's a good thing. You'll be spending a lot of money in Texas. How much Americans do you think going to spend on beer today?
Oh, I have no idea. I can't even imagine.
About $600 million.
Okay, not a bad day for the beer industry.
No, probably not a bad day for the beer industry. How much is it going to cost for a 30-second ad on the game today?
Oh, you know, I haven't been following that, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's somewhere in the $8 to $10 million 30-second range.
A little high, $5 million for a 30-second.
Okay, five. I knew it was five not too long ago, but these things seem to explode almost exponentially.
And they're estimating 8.6 million TV sets were sold because people wanted to upgrade their TV sets to watch Super Bowl this week.
All right.
$82 million will be spent on chicken wings, this is according to Nielsen. $80 million on deli salads, $58 million on sandwiches. That seems kind of low. $277 million on potato chips. That's a lot of potato chips. $225 million on tortilla chips. $71 million on cheese snacks, which I guess it means like Cheetos and stuff. This one's saying $1.2
million. How much is being spent on kale and spinach and broccoli platters?
$472.37.
And most of that's from here in Laguna.
Probably it is. Yeah, most of that's in California. I believe it's negative $42 million in other states. Nielsen saying $1.2 billion in beer sales. And they're saying $600 million in wine. And I will be contributing to that wine amount today. And $500 million in hard liquor.
So, and I bet the irony is not lost on so many Americans that much of our beer industry comes from German immigrants, ask Anheuser-Busch.
Sure, absolutely.
Pizza comes from our Italian immigrant brothers and sisters.
Sure.
By way of China, as, you know, legend would have it.
The noodles, yes, absolutely.
So, thank goodness.
And tortilla chips, of course, come from
South Central
L.A.
Well, and I bet they were brought on the backs of people with calves the size of cantaloupes.
Well, as long as they kept them dry.
As long as they kept them dry.
All right.
So thank goodness for our immigrant populations. Otherwise, we'd have Americans eating kale Super Bowl Sunday. And, of course, you know, very popular, sushi platters.
Yeah, no, but whatever. Okay, let's make our predictions. So we can close this out and turn this over to Full English Breakfast and Jason Fetty.
Oh, yeah, let's get the mature adults in the studio.
Who thinks football is a game you play with a round ball where you kick each other? What's your prediction for the game today?
Well, you know, my hope is, I don't know that this is a prediction because it's going to be a very close game, I believe. My hope is Atlanta. I was raised
in
Atlanta.
Well, you lived in Atlanta for a while, so you're...
I was raised in Atlanta. Do you know that Atlanta's colors, red and black, come from the University of Georgia? The founding owner of the Atlanta Falcons was a University of Georgia alumnus.
I didn't know that.
And Rankin Smith.
And they're red and black. I knew Rankin's, that's right. Okay, yeah, I didn't know he was from Joe. I mean, he was a UG grad. What's your score real quick? Run out of time.
Oh, my thought is somewhere around 33-31 Atlanta.
Okay, so close
game. Ekes out a win.
Sorry, 38-16.
Oh, no. Patriots. Atlanta's got a very high-powered offense. It's going to be tough for New England to shut them down.
Laguna Roundtable is signing off. Next up, Jason Fetty for Language Breakfast. We'll be back next week and enjoy this as we close out a little Sugar Land, Atlanta-based band for the fairness of equal... Of fair and balance on each side. And have a good game, folks. Be safe, don't lose your drive. And we'll talk to you next week.
One more. Well, I heard Steve Earle had lots of wives, about as many as cats have lives. Met him on his records, and we're good friends. He writes a song for everyone. They fall in love, and before it's done, he writes an even better one when.